twisted. This rap shit is mine, motherfuckers. A fucking game. Fuck what you heard. It's what you hearing. It's what you hearing. Listen. It's what you hearing. Listen. It's what you hearing. Listen. X gon' give it to you. Fuck, wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock. Open up the door. Okay, sorry, I couldn't decide where to cut that off because the whole song X is going to give it to you is just such a good song. And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan, and here with me today, Andrew Nigel couldn't make it, but I have a man who coaches women's basketball on an elementary school level. Tommy, how's it going today, Tommy?
What? Where did you get that fact from? I didn't even know that was on my resume.
Look, man, I know things that you only wish you knew. Oh,
I feel like I'm in like a Fight Club scenario right now where there's an alternate personality doing things when I think I'm sleeping.
That may or may not be the case. You know, like, remember that time that you woke up in Richard's pants? You know, it's kind of like that scenario.
You had to go there.
Look, at least I'm not going into details about that whole night. But anyway, we're here to talk about college football, believe it or not. So last week, I don't know about your thoughts. Nigel seemed to think it was really interesting. To me, there didn't seem to be a lot of big games last week, except for one major one, which was Ohio State at Penn State. So we're going to talk about what happened at the end of that game. Honestly, there wasn't a lot at the very end, but about 4 minutes left in the game, there was a field goal block by Penn State. The field goal would have put Ohio State ahead by a full score. However, because they blocked the kick, Penn State went ahead by a field goal, and from there they were able to win out the game. So it was a big deal for them at home, and it finally shuts down Ohio State. So Penn State's already lost to Michigan. I mean, they're pretty much out of the Big Ten. So what impact, Tommy, do you think this is going to have on the playoff and the Big Ten race?
So heading into this week, my thought was how it's basically been all season, is that the Ohio State-Michigan game was going to determine the Big Ten. After this week, that definitely changes a lot. So the teams we're looking at now, and actually if you look at the top 25, there's a number of teams in there from the Big Ten that aren't Ohio State and Michigan. So just kind of looking at the top 10 here, we've got Michigan still sitting in at number 2. Ohio State's still at 6, so they only dropped 4 places. Nebraska's at 7. And then you've got Wisconsin at 11. So they've got 4 teams all in the top 12. You know, that's more than most conferences have. So I think those are the 4 teams you have to look at. The problem the Big Ten's going to have is if Wisconsin ends up being the champion, you've got a 2-loss Big Ten championship team, which could end up losing out to a undefeated Baylor, West Virginia from the Big 12, Washington out of the Pac-12, Clemson out of the ACC, and Alabama out of the SEC. So there's definitely a chance that the Big Ten can be left out, but you know, they've got, between Ohio State and Nebraska, they have pretty good shots there. So I think what changed is Ohio State's chances got hurt, and it kind of brought the spotlight back to Nebraska and Wisconsin a little bit more.
But you don't feel like it actually affected their ranking itself? You seem to think that they're still in the running as long as they can beat Michigan.
Well, yeah, a win over the number 2 team is always really good. What's really interesting is if you look at ESPN's win probability in that game, at one point in the game, Ohio State was favored at a 97.6% chance of winning, and that was with 36 seconds left in the third quarter. And then if you look all the way to about right around 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, they had a 92% chance of winning. And that was at 5 minutes and 40 seconds. When we look less than 2 minutes later, Penn State was favored with an 85% chance of winning. So just the absolute plummet that happened is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, basically, as soon as the kick got blocked, it really screwed them over. I mean, yeah, I think that's a huge momentum shift.
Yeah, it's just rare to see such a huge swing so quickly in a win probability.
Unless you're Tennessee.
Yeah. True.
Nigel did send me his notes. He's got this loss will definitely affect their alcohol dependence over at Ohio State. If you keep in mind, Ohio State has legalized alcohol in their stadium, something that I think a lot of other schools should at least consider. But he basically says what Tommy says. It's not really going to have an impact. It's all still going to come down to the Michigan-Ohio State game. But this isn't really going to knock either the teams out of this conference. Like you said, they're the SEC this year. I'm sure I'm pissing off a lot of people by saying that, but they've got the four top teams in the top 12. So per the rankings, they are, quote unquote, the most talented team out, the most talented conference out there.
The one thing I do want to point out that's really interesting right now is that if Ohio State beats Michigan, there's a chance that we end up with a three-way tie in the Big Ten East for the win, because you have Penn State who beat Ohio State and Michigan who beat Penn State. So if Ohio State does beat Michigan and all three teams win out the rest of their games, there's a chance we could end up with a three-way tie in the Big Ten East, which is just would be so much fun to watch.
I think that's happened before, though. I forget what the tiebreaker is, but I know that has happened before in the Big Ten. It's been an interesting controversy.
Yeah, so I did actually look up the Big Ten's divisional tiebreakers, and they actually go all the way down to their fifth tiebreaker. So the first four are, you know, comparing records of common opponents, division opponents, that kind of thing. But the final one comes out to be who has the best win percentage based off of excluding exempt games. So exempt games would be something like a D2 opponent or an FCS opponent. And based off what I'm reading here, it looks like it's going to be decided by drawing of a hat. So nobody actually has exempt games. So everybody would finish with a 11-1 record. So it's going to go to drawing of a hat. So we'll see if Michigan, Ohio State, or Penn State comes out of that. That would be a great way to determine who makes the playoff, and I would love to see it happen.
I sense no sarcasm there at all.
No, honestly, I would love to see that happen. That would be great.
Just pull the winner out of a hat. Okay, good luck. Well, they would still have to play the team in the West, but that would be definitely a concern for the future. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about Boise State and Western Michigan staying undefeated. Boise State had a rough run-in in a really messed up game with BYU. I think they're praising the Mormon God that they somehow pulled that game out, because honestly, BYU just kind of gave it away with the five turnovers, but they were really going back and forth for a while there. Western Michigan still hung on pretty convincingly. And another team I want to talk about, Houston, finally fell out of the top 25 after a loss to Southern Methodist, which I think is their first time out of the top 25 in at least a year, probably longer than that. So it's an interesting situation. Two teams staying undefeated. Will they have an impact on the playoff, Tommy?
You know, there's a lot of football left. But based off the Penn State win we talked about, and really to determine whether they're going to, I'm going to take a step back here to determine whether or not they're going to have an impact on, the final, playoff depends on the Big Five conferences. So right now you have somebody undefeated from all five, Power Five conferences. And based off the way the schedule lines up and everything, the SEC and the Pac-12 should have spots in with Alabama and Washington, provided they both get out of their conference championship game and they don't choke on somebody they shouldn't or they should beat. which is everybody left on their schedule. So if you look at those two in, then we have two more spots. We've got Clemson sitting out there. We've got West Virginia sitting out there. We've got Nebraska and Michigan in the Big Ten. So if, you know, two of those teams end up undefeated, then no, they won't have an impact. If they start getting into the 1-2 loss, or if somebody else beats them and takes their spot in their conference championship game, there's a chance it could be. But if that happens, it's going to be Boise State. It's not going to be Western Michigan that gets that extra spot.
Okay. Nigel brings up an interesting point. There's not much to say about Houston losing because it's kind of surprising. It's kind of come out of the blue with them losing the Navy and losing the SMU. But would this affect Tom Herman's future job prospects, considering how well he's performed up to this point?
Well, to an extent, I mean, obviously you look at wins and losses, and that's what determines whether or not somebody's going to get the big job is, are they winning games that they should and not losing games that they shouldn't? And are they being competitive? And, you know, Houston's slipping. So this is something that, as an athletic director that's looking around, would be something that's concerning. You know, they have a ton of talent on that team. And they're not losing to games where they're stepping up. You know, they're not losing to the Alabamas and Ole Misses and Power Five teams. They're losing to their conference opponents. And that would worry me if I'm Texas or LSU looking at Tom Herman, because there are other good coaches out there that you could consider to fill that gap.
Yeah, so Georgia Tech's not going to be looking at Tom Herman anymore. That's what you're telling me. Okay, got it. All right. Well, Andrew will be glad to hear that. I mean, other than that, yeah, I mean, I don't really have much to add. Western Michigan looks like the better Power Five, or not Power Five, Group of Five representative at this point. But it's kind of hard to see where that turns out. But hey, if the Cubs win the World Series, anything is possible.
Yeah, and they're playing the Indians, so anything's already possible.
Hey, man, PJ Fleck is a Cubs fan, so I'm going to keep talking about the Cubs. Although, I've got the game on in the background. Cleveland's looking like they're doing pretty good for themselves right now. So moving on, let's talk about the team that we have to talk about every week because they're the best team in college football. So, Bama, they're still good. And the rest of the SEC is kind of underperformed so far this year. Honestly, the best teams other than Bama were probably Florida, and we haven't really seen much out of them after their loss to Tennessee. Auburn, as much as it pains me to say it, and LSU after they fired Les Miles, oddly enough. I mean, a lot of these other teams have kind of underperformed or really struggled at certain points. It's a very weird scenario. Part of that is because they are playing against each other, so you're seeing a lot of weird losses to teams that you probably wouldn't think they should be losing to. What is your thought, Tommy, right now of the SEC? Right now they have six teams in the top 25. Do all those teams deserve to be ranked where they are? For example, Texas A&M is at 9 after their loss last week to Alabama.
So I hate myself for saying this because this is something that I always talk about, is that you have to win your games. But my honest opinion is the five best teams in the SEC are all in the West. And I even say Ole Miss is one of the better, is better than Florida, Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia. And yes, Kentucky is number 2 in the East, so they get mentioned here. All right, deal with it. But yeah, between Alabama, A&M, Auburn and LSU as they are today, not how they open the season, and even Arkansas, you know, so you could throw the sixth team in there. I think they're all better than that East side, and I think that they are suffering a little bit from playing each other. That being said, I don't think LSU deserves to be ranked. I don't think Arkansas deserves to be ranked, and I don't think Ole Miss deserves to be ranked. That's just how I feel about it.
Well,
luckily, I don't think any of them are ranked. Oh, LSU's at 19.
Yeah, LSU's at 19. I was going to list them off before you continued, but yeah, your LSU's at 19. Tennessee and Florida are the ones I don't understand because we just haven't seen a lot out of Florida. They're 14, but Tennessee is at 18, and God, they only lost to Alabama and A&M, who were the powerhouses of the West. A&M honestly confuses me a bit. I still don't know. It seems like losing, I guess, quality losses just seem to mean a lot to the committee because they're ranked at 9, so they didn't really fall much at all after losing to Alabama. Auburn's at 15, which I hate, but I can understand. Their biggest loss was probably – they lost to Clemson, and who else did they lose to? Texas A&M, that's right. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then we know why Bama's number one. I get that. It just seems weird, like, Florida's up at 14, and they haven't really done anything other than dodge a game against LSU and lose to Tennessee. Like, who else have they played?
You know, but at the end of the day, they are still a one-loss team. So this goes back to what I do preach all the time is that, you know, a one-loss team is better than a two-loss team pretty much across the board. Now, I did go and break my rule saying that I think the five best teams in the SEC are all in the West, but I can understand ranking them that high with a one loss. When you start getting into the twos and three losses, that's when I really start to have issues with them being rated over one-loss teams.
You mean like Florida State ranked at 12 and Wisconsin ranked
and
at
11? Wisconsin at 11, yes. Yes, I don't think they deserve to be that high. I think if you take them and Auburn and Oklahoma and Tennessee and LSU and North Carolina and bump them down, you need to move Western Michigan up, you need to move Navy up, you need to move Boise up. And you definitely need to move West Virginia up. The fact that they're an undefeated West Virginia team. Now, granted, they are playing in the Big 12, and we really don't know what the heck is going on with the Big 12. They've earned a spot to be a top, probably a top five team at this point. Maybe not above Baylor and Nebraska, but at least top eight. I think they should jump A&M, and I think Louisville and Ohio State shouldn't be rated as highly as they are right now because they have a loss, and there are plenty of undefeated teams because we are just at the midpoint of the season.
I at least understand the argument with Louisville because that was basically a coin flip ending. But, yeah, I do agree. Those teams – the way college football works and the reason it's interesting is basically because you need to win every game to get into the championship. So – in my mind, those teams lost. Unless it becomes a story where we've got a bunch of one-loss teams fighting for it, they shouldn't even be in the conversation. So, yeah, that does bug me a bit.
Yeah, another thing is the way I look at ranking, too, is it kind of depends about what's coming down the turnpike. Is if you look at Louisville and where they are, like you're saying are a top-five team, but right now their destiny is not in their hands. It's in Clemson's hands right now. Clemson has to drop two games. So in that mind, Louisville's not even going to get a crack at the ACC championship. So why are they rated above Nebraska, who's 7-0 and in control of their own destiny to make it to the Big Ten championship and have a potential to knock off the Michigan or Penn State or Ohio State?
Well, that's true. Right. And while this is not the BCS, though, we have seen in the past where – you know, an Alabama who did not play in the SEC championship ended up in a playoff game against LSU, of all people. So, you know, stuff like that does happen. It's really unusual, and I think a lot of people are right in feeling that it shouldn't occur, but it's nothing we haven't seen before, and the current system still has a lot of the flaws that the old system had, and that's just what kind of what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify, I'm not arguing that Ohio State or A&M or somebody should jump Louisville. I'm arguing that Nebraska and West Virginia, I'm arguing the undefeated teams should be your top-rated ones because at this point in the season, we've played enough games to where it's impressive to be undefeated. There's, what, 8 teams undefeated total? So out of 128, so that's an impressive feat.
Well, and the other thing to me is you got to take into consideration who are these guys playing next week. Like, I think they should, and maybe this is like a conspiracy theory for ratings and stuff, but it's kind of like the opposite, because you think if they were trying to get the ratings, they would rank these teams better. But like Nebraska, they're playing Wisconsin next week. That's going to be a huge game. If they win, they really, you know, if they lose, then you can clearly drop them down to basically where they are right now. But until they do lose, they're undefeated. They should probably be in the five spot. And it's not like they haven't played a bunch of hard teams.
Yeah, and if you really want to go conspiracy theory, Wisconsin should be the number 10 team right now so they can get a top 10 matchup, because right now it's not a top 10 matchup because they're at 11.
Right. Well, that's why it's kind of a counter conspiracy, I guess. But anyway, look, we could talk about this all day, but we do need to move on. Okay. So speaking of Wisconsin, we've kind of talked about all this already. They've finally won in a big prove me game, which oddly enough was against an unranked team in Iowa. Do you feel like they deserve to be in the spot that they are? God, this really is the topic we were just talking about.
Yeah, and you know, the other interesting thing is the two big game, like Wisconsin has two top 10 wins on their resume technically, because they beat Michigan State when they were ranked 8 and LSU when they were ranked 5th. Now, we know that neither of those teams are a top 10 team at this point in the season. So what does that really mean? And, you know, they did play Michigan and Ohio State close. They were within a touchdown of both those teams. So their two losses are to two of the top three teams in the Big Ten. So, you know, somebody's got to lose one of those. So I definitely think they are a force to be reckoned with, but as far as top 10, that two losses, I don't think you've necessarily earned it.
Right. Well, and then like LSU, I don't even think they deserve to be ranked 19th, but a lot of these teams get by on their name alone. Nigel's kind of on my side. He thinks that Wisconsin's only ranked that high to give Nebraska that big time matchup next week, which in a way works, but in another way, yeah, I'm surprised they couldn't have pushed them up ahead of West Virginia. They're already screwing over West Virginia enough with where they're at.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And, you know, if you look at Nebraska's schedule, and I actually kind of feel bad for the athletic department because they put Oregon on the schedule. So, and, you know, these schedules are set 3, 4, 5 years ago. So it's not like they were trying to hamstring themselves with an easy schedule, but
yeah, I mean, no one was expecting Oregon to be 2-5, so what are you gonna do? Not back then anyway.
Yeah, the biggest knock to Nebraska is Penn State beating Ohio State since they dodged Michigan. That's gonna hurt them and their resume a little bit.
So speaking of another team, because gosh, we just can't get off of rankings. Colorado knocked off Stanford last week, which I guess is not really an achievement at this point. Although I do want to bring up how you were the one telling me early in the year that I was crazy for not picking Stanford to come out as the champion of the Pac-12. So how's that working out for you right now, Tommy?
You know, so I owe all 6 of our listeners an apology. I jumped on the Christian McCaffrey bandwagon and I held on for dear life. You know, I put the full costume on and I put full body paint on, and I was wrong, just completely and utterly wrong. He's not on track. He's almost a full yard off his average from last year. In as far as rushing, and then he's almost 5 full yards off his average, per game off his receiving. So he's not what I thought he was going to be this year.
To be fair,
it's disappointing.
To be fair, a lot of Heisman candidates have kind of struggled this year. I mean, Leonard Fournette only came back last week, so that might be why his stats have been really hampered. But, you know, you're seeing a lot of Heisman candidates kind of struggle this year.
Yeah, can we also talk about the final score being 10-5? Between Colorado and Stanford? And like that safety was in the fourth quarter. So
that was Stanford trying to prove something. Sorry, an ad came up while I was looking at the website. But yeah, that was Stanford trying to prove something right there. Like, I love how it didn't affect the winning percentage at all. You were talking about winning percentage, FPI.
Yeah, and actually, I think it happened on like the last play of the game, or like the second to last play of the game. Like, they hiked the ball with like 8 seconds left, and then it ended up being a safety.
Oh, you're right. It was the very last play of the game. Oh my god. Yeah, and go figure. Oh my gosh. What a weird look. All I can say about Colorado though is Colorado is a very well coached team, and I'm glad that they've turned it around. They hadn't made a bowl game in, I forget exactly how long, I think it was 2004, maybe farther back than that. It's been a while. But yeah, good on them for pulling this out. In fact, at this point, they're battling to win the conference. Nigel has actually got this. He sent me in his notes. Nigel's got Colorado winning 10 games. I'm like, I don't know if I would go that far. They've still got to face UCLA. They got to go on the road to Arizona. And then they got to play Washington State, who has bounced back in an incredible way, and Utah. So I don't know if they're going to win all of those games, but they can do quite well with what they've got left and the talent that they've got. Tommy, you got anything?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. glad to know you've got so much to add to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just glad to be here. You know why I'm here.
Oh man. You gotta pay those living expenses somehow. So really quick, I didn't write this on our list, but I wanted to touch on this topic really fast. Honestly, I was kind of hoping Andrew would be here, because this has kind of been our battle for the past couple of weeks. In terms of, you know, coaching performance versus player performance, so Les Miles firing is looking like a better decision by the week, apparently. Every week since he's been fired, the team has put up some kind of offensive record each 3 weeks. Versus Missouri, it was most yards ever against an SEC opponent, 634. Against Southern Missouri? No. The Southern Eagles, they had the most yards per play in LSU history, which is 11 yards per play. And against Ole Miss, this was the game that Fournette decided to come back in. He ran for 284 yards on 16 carries, which was a single game record. So one of those is clearly on player performance with Fournette. But at a certain point, you kind of got to go like, if we had this same talent with Les Miles on offense, why weren't we performing? What was the key difference here? Was it really that Ed Orgeron just took it over and changed the locker room mentality? Go ahead, Tommy.
You know, an interesting fact is this is not the first time Ed Orgeron has been a interim head coach at a Power 5 school. I don't know if he's going for a record or something, but they had at Southern Cal, he was the interim head coach in 2013, and he took over a program that had losses to Washington State, who was god-awful that year. And they had a loss to Arizona State, who was not nearly as bad that year. But that was the whole Lane Kiffin, like, don't get on the bus type thing. But then Ed Orgeron comes in, and he goes 6-2 over the next games, including a win over the number 5 ranked Stanford. So it's just really interesting that he has this way of motivating people to come in and, you know, play well. He's a player's coach. He knows how to rally the players around him. He's a solid recruiter in what he does. So as far as interim coach, I think he's a great hire. And I don't know why USC didn't keep him on after that. I guess because he lost to UCLA, and that's like, you know, being at Alabama and losing to Auburn. So that's the only thing I can think of, because he's done this before. So I'm just not surprised that he's doing it with the amount of talent and the pedigree that LSU has.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is going to change things. Like, I don't think they're suddenly going to win against Alabama, but as a person outside, but as a fan, you would suddenly think, as from the season you started with Les Miles, I think you suddenly think, hey, we've got a chance to beat Alabama. You know, from where I'm sitting, that's just not going to happen. But I think you got to be optimistic. It's just so weird. Like, Les Miles has had this talent for years, and he wasn't able to do some of these things. Like, most yards per play, yeah, most yards ever against an SEC opponent. You could argue that those teams that they were playing were not very talented, but it's not like you weren't playing, you know, FCS, FBS schools, you know, teams leveled down and weak teams like Kentucky before. So I don't know why you couldn't pull this off while this guy was in charge. I don't know. Anyway.
Not to mention he did it without Leonard Fournette, didn't he?
Yeah, for those two games, he was without Leonard Fournette. Fournette only came back against Ole Miss.
Yeah, so he did two of those three records without Fournette.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I feel like that is on a coach, and I don't want to say bad things. You know, obviously, it didn't seem like a good idea at the time, but now, if you're an LSU fan, you got to feel much better about that fire.
You know, the one thing I will say is Les Miles is still a great coach, and the fact that Ed Ogeron has been able to do this speaks to the recruiting that Les Miles was able to put together, though. Because if he hadn't put that talent on that team, Ogeron would not be having the success he did. So just a little tidbit to...
You're absolutely correct. I'm not taking away from him there. I'm always amazed because you were in the locker room, so you maybe understand the situation better than I do. But it's so weird to see, like, the talent didn't change. The players on the field haven't really changed. So what the heck happened between that fire that suddenly made everything do a complete 180? But anyway, yeah, it's just one of those things. Maybe
we could do a whole segment on that one.
Yeah, maybe this is another time. Anyway, we're going to move on, go into the Fish-Smithson report. So Andrew wasn't here to put together a list for us. So... I'm going to take Fish, and Tommy, I think you're taking his good friend.
His long-lost brother.
So I'll go ahead and get in this Fish stats for the week. He had a game. Sadly, that was mostly because Oklahoma State was beating Kansas so badly in the third and fourth quarter, apparently. But he had some great stats. He had 16 total tackles, 14 solo tackles, one sack, and one tackle for a loss. And all of that was led the both teams for both tackles, solo tackles, and tackles for a loss. So really impressive on his part. Sadly, it was in a losing effort for Kansas. They just kind of fell apart in the second half. They were actually playing very closely for the first half. But that's the way it goes. Good guy. I hope he gets the recognition he deserves. Or continues, he's certainly going to continue to get the recognition from us. Tommy, why don't you go ahead?
So Weston Steelhammer did not have the day that Fish-Smithson did. He ended up with 8 tackles, 4 solo, 4 assists, and a double overtime loss to Hawaii. So just heartbreaking, and his stats really just don't really show compared to some of his more successful outings, like when he played Wyoming or New Mexico.
Oh, go figure. You know, that's just the way it goes sometimes. He'll bounce back next week, unless next week is a bye week. Is next week a bye week?
Well, you gotta put me on the spot. No, it's not. They play at Fresno State.
I'm confident that he will bounce back against Fresno State. All right. Well, Tommy, I got to put you on the spot again. It is your chance. It is your time. Useless facts of the week. I don't get to read it off this time, so I'm curious to hear it in your monotone. Go for it.
Yeah. So one more thing. I actually just found this out. Weston Steelhammer is actually a Jim Thorpe Award semifinalist. So congrats to him. That's pretty awesome.
Wait, for this year?
Yeah, for 2016. So...
I guess Texas Fish-Smithson has been nominated.
Yeah. So while you go into that, I'm going to talk about the amazing stat that is time of possession. So time of possession is a very odd stat that can be used in determination of things like game control and ideas of how an offense works or how a defense works and that kind of thing. So when you think of time of possession, it comes down to the fact that there are 60 minutes in a game, and are you going to control it for more or less than half of the game? So if we look at that, the split is actually right around the 60 mark. So pretty much half the teams, which makes sense. But when we look at the edges of either a lot of time of possession or a little time of possession, we get some pretty bad teams. So Akron, Georgia State, Texas State, Oregon, who's been struggling, those are all teams that have averaged 25 minutes a game or less of possession. So they've given up, the opposing offense has had the ball for 35 minutes of the game or more. And then if we look on the other extreme, you've got Army, Utah, Arkansas, Georgia, who have all had the ball for 35 minutes of the game or more. But it's when you really start getting down into the middle that you start finding some of those teams that we're talking about that are the big ones. So if you want to try to find teams that have more up-tempo offense that you would expect to have less time of possession, like Clemson, Oregon, Boise State, all those teams are averaging 27 minutes or less of time of possession. So TCU, Baylor, Clemson, and even Rutgers is there. So exactly where you would think, but they're sitting right around the 105 to 106 mark. So there's about 25 plus teams that are worse than them, which puts them in, you know, the 70th percentile or something like that. And then if we go to the other side, and we look for teams that we don't think of as big ones, like Alabama and Auburn, and Virginia Tech, some of those type of teams, those are all sitting once again right around the 30 mark. So it kind of makes sense that you don't want to be on the extremes here. You want to kind of be not in the exact middle. You want to be either a little bit higher or a little bit lower. And there's kind of a cluster of all the top teams right around the 32 to 33% minute control, or the 25 to 26 minute control time frame. So I just found it kind of interesting. I have no idea. I haven't tracked this over time or multiple years, but this is just what I'm noticing this year.
Well, it's a good stat. I think it makes, you're right, it makes sense. You don't want to hold on to the ball for so long but not score, and at the same time you don't want to have three and outs where you don't have any time of possession at all in the game. But I thought it was fascinating. Like, some of those teams you were listing, I was like, Oregon, I could have sworn that they would have had more time of possession now, considering how they've been losing some of their games. But I guess because of the offense they run, they'd still get stuck in the middle somewhere. It's kind of weird.
And, you know, that goes back to coaching philosophy, which is really interesting, is when you run an offense like the Auburn, Clemson, Oregon's that are up-tempo, if you're not making first downs or scoring points, you're putting yourself in a deep hole to dig out of, versus a team like, you know, Georgia Tech or Navy that just love to hold on to the ball, that if you're not ending up scoring those drives, you're not giving yourself a lot of opportunity. So it makes sense that you want to find a little bit of a balance. So even the teams that are extreme in their philosophies, they still kind of moderate themselves if they're being successful.
Correct. Okay. Well, I did find the Fish-Smithson is up for an award, but it's kind of like an unknown award. It's not like a nationally recognized class senior award, which is a loyalty. Let me get the correct wording. It is a award for celebrating loyalty and achievement for staying in school. Good for him. Anyway, so he's up for that one, but sadly not any performance awards, I'm guessing because he's out of Kansas. All right, well, that's all we got. And Tommy, unless you want to say anything real fast? I'll go.
Yeah, ahead. I've got one thing I wanted to say, and we talked about this a little bit before. I want to give major props to the University of Central Florida, who didn't buy into UConn's shit of creating a trophy just because they won a football game 2 years ago. UCF went to UConn, beat them, and then left the trophy on the field. So UConn's been trying to make this rivalry. They named it the Civil Conflict, and UCF wants nothing to do for it. And even when they earn the trophy, they just leave it on the field, and I think that's awesome.
So for those of you who don't know what Tommy's talking about, basically UConn, if you remember, a while ago they got into the American Conference. They didn't really have any because the Big East kind of just fell apart. So they came into the American, and after beating UCF, they just decided on the year that they beat UCF, you know what, we're going to have a rivalry. I don't even know if they talked to UCF about it. The coach just decided to announce, okay, we're a rival with UCF, and we beat them. And then UConn made a trophy, and they just held on to it. So this year, UCF goes on the road, beats UConn, and I do agree with Tommy. Like, all the props to them for just saying, like, we're not your fucking rivals. This is not amusing. You know, screw you. Keep your stupid trophy. I love it. It's the Civil Conflict. Like, what even is that? As a rivalry in college football? I'm sorry. When you've got, like, the Holy War and stuff like that, what the hell is the Civil Conflict? This whole thing just is amusing to me. But, yeah, as absolutely as Tommy said, all the props to UCF for just basically telling Connecticut to go fuck themselves.
It's great. I love it.
All right. Anything else that we need to talk about real fast? Nigel and Andrew's propensity to jump on the Georgia bagwagon? No.
They better not.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up. We're going to end our show for today. Thank you, as always, for listening. You can see more posts at toemeetsleather.net. Until next week, have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.